The following is brought to you by Two Good Geeks Radio Network. Be it Star Wars, Marvel, DC, or cinematic adventures, Two Good Geeks Radio Network has something for you. No matter the geek tastes.
Fucking guy comes out of nowhere, kicks our asses.
Let me see, Trey. Hey, what's more likely, huh? Was stolen by Superman. Batman.
I never said Batman!
Enough!
I thought my jokes were bad.
On a day.
I need your help. I need your team.
On a day which lived in the halls of justice. The Legions of Limitless Justice came to be.
Every man has to have a code. Mine? Precision.
What's going on?
We need to be ready.
Limitless Justice, a DC podcast.
We are here to save mankind.
News, reviews, and a limitless DC promise.
No good comes from hero worship.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the first edition of Limitless Justice, a DC podcast. I am your host, David Senden, and with me, a guy who's enthusiasm has been from one end of this internet to the other, and it gets around quicker than the Flash. I swear to God it does. We call him Filmmaker Mike. Mike, how you doing?
Good, how are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh, not a problem, man. Not a problem. Well, folks, we figured for this first episode of Limitless Justice, we'll go over Man of Steel.
To yourself to find out what that reason is.
How do you find someone who has spent a lifetime covering his tracks? For some, he was a guardian angel. For others, a ghost who never quite fit in.
We'll give the people of Earth an ideal to strive towards. They will race behind you. They will stumble. They will fall. But in time, they will join you in the sun. In time, you will help them accomplish wonders.
You believe your son is safe?
I will find him!
My father believed if the world found out who I really was, they'd reject me. He was convinced that the world wasn't ready. What do you think?
What's the S stand for?
It's not an S. In my world, it means hope.
Well, here it's an S. How about...
Excuse me.
What do you know, Mike? We finally get to see Krypton, of all places.
Yeah, I love the version of Krypton that they had in Man of Steel. What I really appreciated about it, of course, we saw Krypton in the 1978 Superman the movie, but it was a different Krypton. It was more of an ice crystal Krypton, and in this Krypton, it's like Kevin Smith himself said, it's like Avatar, you know, but not as lush and not as, you know, it looks like a very harsh world. You can see in the and I didn't even notice this until I saw it on the Blu-ray, that you can see that they've harvested the core of the planet. When I watch the Blu-ray now, it's only when I notice that the landscape and the ground and whatever structures there are, it looks like they've really mined all the resources that they could from the planet itself. And it's a very... I love this take on Krypton. We have flying beasts and flying ships and the costumes, everything about it. I could have watched a whole hour of this Krypton, honestly, and the whole setup of establishing Zod even more and his group with Feora and Jor-El and Lara. You know, I would have loved to see more of this Krypton, because it's just very cool and very different from what we've seen before.
So you're supporting that they do a Krypton prequel, you're on board?
Oh yeah, definitely. I wish it would have came before, but I guess I read somewhere that Russell Crowe was asked if they would do a Krypton prequel, if he would be up for it, and from what I can remember, he said he would totally do it.
Oh, nice. Yeah, Russell Crowe, now, that was, to me, that was an interesting choice for Jor-El. When people would ask me, you know, after we saw the film, where Jor-El learned to fight, and I'm like, well, in the Gladiator movie, where do you think he learned to fight?
Yeah, I loved when they announced Russell Crowe as Jor-El, I already knew, like, okay, this is someone who has won an Oscar, and they know that, you know, whenever they cast actors like this, especially for an iconic role, I have full faith that they know what they're doing, and, you know, it was great what we got. I love Russell Crowe as Jor-El. He was perfect.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, this whole codex... I wasn't quite sure where they were going with that. Could you have cleared that up a bit?
With the codex? Well, I thought that was a very interesting choice. I went into this movie as spoiler-free as much as possible before I saw it. But I did hear stuff and read some stuff. Not exactly spoilers, but I just read stuff that supposedly that they changed. They changed some of the origin of Superman, that he wouldn't be. I think I remember reading somewhere that Superman doesn't really have powers when he's born. It's Jor-El like injects his powers into him, and so he is the only one who has powers on Krypton, or when he comes to Earth and it's activated by the yellow sun, stuff like that. But we all know that Superman does get his powers from the yellow sun of the Earth, and he's essentially, it's because of his biological makeup, his cells, that, you know, as soon as it hits yellow sun radiation, that's when he gets his powers. But I thought it was interesting, the things that are presented in this movie, whether it's the fact of the whole race of Krypton, and that every Kryptonian is born into either being a warrior, a worker, a servant, or whichever class they are. I love that they did that, and the whole premise why Jor-El and Lara decided to have a natural birth and to have a child naturally was to give their own child the freedom of choice, to for him to choose what he wanted to be, which I thought was just beautiful. It's a beautiful message, and I really like that they, you know, the Codex, when he started putting it on Kal-El's body, on his cells when he was a baby, I thought that was interesting, because even Jor-El, later in the movie, Jor-El even tells Kal-El that we were hoping that later on you could be a bridge between two peoples, where Kryptonians and humans could exist, and, you know, the Kryptonian race could also flourish once again, and be able to have the freedom of choice now, and not be able to just be assigned this and that.
Now, Henry Cavill, the man that carries this whole film, probably the linchpin of everything DC is going to do in their cinematic universe from this point forward, I would imagine. I thought he was a wonderful Superman, best we've had. What was your take on this guy?
Oh yeah, Henry Cavill was the best choice to play Superman for this movie. I mean, just a great, of course he obviously has the look, but what really, you know, and of course he obviously did very well in the movie for me. What I'm very impressed and what I really admire about him is that he takes the character not just seriously, but with a lot of respect.
Now, one of the things in the cast that I thought worked incredibly well, Mike, why are your take on it? Lawrence Fishburne. I thought the change of Perry White went remarkably well.
Yeah, it did. I loved what, you know, the whole cast, not just Lauren Fishburne, but everyone else. I was really impressed with how well the cast seemed to just work together. You know, and there was not any time watching the movie, especially for the first time, that I thought that one actor was overacting or one actor didn't seem to fit in the character. Everyone did very well, and I loved the tension, especially of Lawrence Fishburne's Perry White with Amy Adams' Lois Lane, where he was just, you know, I mean, they have this mutual respect for each other, but at the same time, like, they're willing to stick to their guns and really fight for what they think is, you know, what they think is right.
One of the things to talk about really big with some people got really annoyed by it, but does Superman kill? Well, apparently he does, because he, you know, if you haven't seen the film, well, what are you doing? But, spoiler alert, he snaps Zod's neck. And that's upset a lot of people. And I kind of find it a fine issue. I mean, he put Superman in kind of a no-win situation. I mean, on the one side, kill Zod. On the other side, watch these people fry.
I actually agree with you. Well, the first time I saw the movie, I was actually, you know, I was surprised that happened. But then the more I thought about it, and then watching the movie again for a second, a third, and a fourth time, it did make sense, because it's even there in the dialogue when, you know, Superman is holding Zod back, and he's telling him, don't do this. He's screaming, don't do this. And then he's telling him to stop. Zod just says never. So, like you said, there is a no-win situation. You know, if Superman allows Zod to live, I mean, Superman didn't even have, you know, maybe Superman could have easily, like, did a jump thrust, you know, all the way up in the sky while Zod was firing, so he wouldn't, you know, his heat vision wouldn't hit that family. But if Zod himself just said he's never going to stop, it's never going to end, then what choice is Superman left with? You know, he's pretty much pinned to the wall, because he has no other choice but to take the life of Zod. Even if he doesn't want to, he had to make that choice, because it just wouldn't be that family. It wouldn't end with that family. Zod would go on and destroy the whole world and rebuild. And as he said to Jor-El, to the ghost of Jor-El in the ship, I will rebuild Krypton atop your son's bones. You know, so what choice are you left with? I mean, and it's even seen immediately after Superman snaps Zod's neck. He screams out in anger, and just, you know, you feel his loss, that he just realized that he's the last one now, and he was forced to do such a terrible, just to make a terrible decision. And I'm hoping, and I'm sure that we will be seeing that, maybe not addressed specifically, but, you know, we will see the effects of that, and maybe this is what's going to really allow him to grow as Superman and realize that he's not going to want to take a life after this. And I guess a lot of people, and I'm sure, yeah, it was a lot, you know, but then when you go back to Superman 2, what does Superman do at the end with those three Kryptonians, with Zod and Ursa and Nan? I mean, you know, what do they do? Even Lois Lane was a part of it. So, you know, it's interesting that a lot of fans seem to have forgotten what happened in the past Superman movie. But, you know, a lot of fans also, and a lot of people may have forgotten that in the movie, in the timeline, he hasn't even really been Superman for a few days. It's maybe been like, what, 24 hours?
Exactly. Or
a little bit more than a day. And so he's learning, I mean, he's learning to, you know, and even with the destruction, which I wanted to address, I also felt like when I first watched it, it got a little too much. Like, oh my gosh, when is this going to end? But now when I watch it, it's not really that long. You know, the action that happens, I mean, yes, there's a lot of destruction, and supposedly there's a lot of people that, yes, there's a lot of people that died, but the one thing that I really like about these DC movies is that you see the cost, you see not just the fatalities, but you see the repercussions of whatever happens when evil is takes over, when there's villains, and there's real consequences. Unlike the Marvel movies, I mean, yes, we see people die, but in the Avengers, I don't seem to remember seeing any of the civilians die, like, really, like, you know, I don't seem to remember seeing dead bodies. I seem to remember people getting injured and getting frightened. I do remember seeing maybe some S.H.I.E.L.D. agents dying, but then they're S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, they're not civilians. In this movie, there's true costs and a lot of consequences.
Oh yeah.
And Superman unfortunately can't be everywhere. That's the one thing that he's going to have to learn, is that he can't save everyone. He can't you know, and when he's fighting with Zod and they're punching each other through buildings, we don't see people in those buildings. Who knows, they could have already evacuated. So it's one of those, like, if you're not seeing it, then you would assume that they're not in those buildings. And Superman doesn't realize it, that maybe he needs to take the fight away. He's just focusing on trying to stop Zod.
Now, to bring up, you were saying about, or we were talking about the Superman not killing and not killing again. That I theorized it like this, Mike. That by bringing Batman in, Batman has a code. And what better way to counter Superman's ramifications after killing Zod than he runs up against Batman's code?
Yeah, I mean, that would be, you know, that would make perfect sense. And I'm sure, you know, Superman, like I said, Superman himself did not want to do that. And I'm sure that's something that Batman may even push against Superman and say, I don't like what you, you know, when you're... what you did, or, you know, stuff like that.
Well,
but I was even... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, that and Superman kind of did destroy his satellite.
Yeah, which was an Easter egg, which is a really cool Easter egg.
Right.
And I would love to see Batman bring that up to Superman in the sequel and say, you know, I saw you, you know, what, maybe a year ago, whatever, whenever the sequel happens in the timeline, I saw you and I saw the other alien, you know, stuff like that. That would be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they even bring, like, images, like, of that fight, like, it, like, from the point of view of the satellite.
All right, well, Mike, that'll do it for our first episode of the Limitless Justice of DC podcast. I'd like to thank you for joining me, and...
Sure, thank you.
We'll do other shows. We'll see you next time on Limitless Justice.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Take care.
Thanks, you too.